A very good morning. On behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to Take 10 for Talmud. Nedarim Mem Zayin, Nedarim 47b, pagination is 94. We're starting from four lines from the bottom, Masnisin Einu Mishnah. Hareini Olecha Cheirim. If a person says, I should be upon you as Cheirim, as forbidden, Hamudar Osir. So the object of that neder is indeed going to be Osir. The person who's saying the vow is able to forbid his own property on this other person about whom he is speaking. The flip side is Harei At Alai Cheirim. You should be to me as Cheirim, as forbidden. So Hanoder Osir. Indeed, the person who recited the neder and made that declaration will be forbidden to benefit from the person about whom he was talking. The Ran observes that in a previous Mishnah, Yudches Amud Beis 18b, we learnt that the term Cheirim can be understood in two different ways. It could be Cheirim of Bedek Habayis, which would be forbidden, or it could be Cheirmei Kohanim, donations made to the Kohanim, in which case the neder would not create prohibition. It's the wrong wording. That's not a wording that prohibits. And therefore, the Ran says, Uvigalil Mairi. It's referring to a neder. Our Mishnah is referring to a neder that was declared in Galil, not in the area of the Beis HaMikdash. D'stam charomim levedek habayis. Because generally, if the word Cheirim is said, it's referring to Bedek HaBayis, a donation to the Beis HaMikdash, which would indeed be forbidden to regular people to benefit from. And it is not understood to be referring to Cheirmei Kohanim, donations to the Kohanim, to support them on a private donation basis, because in the Galil there were not so many Kohanim, and therefore a statement of Cheirim was referring to the Beis HaMikdash, which was on their mind, and not to the private support of Kohanim, which was not on their minds. The Mishnah continues, Hareini Olecha ve'at alai. If the person says, I am forbidden to you, and you are forbidden to me, Shneim Asurim, they would indeed both be prohibited. He can prohibit on himself whatever he wants, and he can prohibit his own assets on somebody else. The Mishnah now tells us a fascinating exclusion. Ushneya mutarim, even though they have a prohibition one on the other, they're still going to be permitted bidavar shal ole bavil, in things that are described as ole bavil things. Things that when they came up from the exile in Babylonia to build the second Beis HaMikdash, these are the things that they established as communal assets, communal topics. As the Mishnah will explain in a moment, but the concept, for example, the Beis HaMikdash, or a communal well. So these are things that are not owned by each individual, and then the aggregate makes the community. These are things that actually are assets of the community. There's such a category. And therefore, it is not considered as if you own a part, I own a part, the next guy owns a part, and therefore collectively it's called communal, but rather, it goes directly into a category called communal. And if these two people have a vow, one against the other, not to benefit, they're still going to be able to benefit from things described as ole bovel, the established communal things, rather than the things that they're owning together in partnership. Va'asurim bedavar shalosa ha'ir. But they are going to be forbidden in things that are owned as partnership as part of the city. So the Ran explains that the key factor we're looking at over here is that the people of the city are able to sell the item because they are the owners in partnership to the exclusion of the rest of the Jewish people, then it's considered a partnership. So, for example, the case that's discussed is, can the community sell a shul in order to buy a different shul? So the idea in its most fundamental level, the starting point of discussion, is who owns the shul? And what we're looking at over here is, if the shul is owned by the greater Jewish public, it's a communal item, even out of their city, it's just a public shul. In a big city, the Beis HaMikdash would be the classic example. It's owned by everyone. So you can't sell something that's owned by everyone just because you have consensus in your own little city, or even if in your own big city. It's just owned by everyone. But if you have a shul that's servicing the people of the city, and the people of the city have given consent, then, at least in certain circumstances, you'd be able to sell it. The result over here is that this neder that they thought was between me and him and me is very far-reaching. It's going to have ramifications of whether or not they're going to be allowed to daven in their local shul and benefit from those types of communal things. Because in their own city, what's called communal is not greater Jewish people. What's called communal on their local level is actually a partnership between the different residents of the town. We encountered this concept by the laws of Talis. So when a shul has talesim of the shul, so certainly the understood condition is that if a person wants to make a bracha on them, person comes to shul, doesn't have a talis, wants to be able to wear a talis, so certainly the condition and the understanding is that you could borrow it on condition that you return it, and the person can recite a bracha. He takes the talis, he recites a bracha, wears it for davening, and everybody's fine with that. However, what happens if he does not want to make a bracha? He's taking the talis because he gets an aliyah, or he's davening for the amud, and he's just putting it on lekavod hatzibur, to honor the congregation, but really he doesn't expect to own it, to make a bracha on it. It's a quick thing. He wants to do the kibud, and that's it. Would he recite a bracha? And this results in a fascinating shaila and a quandary, in that anybody who has membership in the congregation on some level owns that talis in partnership. And it's actually your talis. And therefore, it's not a question of whether you want to acquire it in order to recite a bracha. It's actually yours already in partnership with the other members of the congregation. And therefore, some congregations actually go ahead and they have the talesim owned by an outside party that they trust, so that no one owns the talesim unless they want to. So if you come in without a talis, you acquire it for yourself. But otherwise, it belongs to this other person. It's a loaner talis, and a loaner talis for a one-time use does not require a bracha. Person grabs the talis, goes up for the aliyah, and would not be required to recite a bracha. Our point is to highlight two different levels of communal assets. You could have something owned in partnership, or you could have something that's fundamentally communal, or in the case of talis, fundamentally private, if you set it up that way. So the Mishnah explains, Ezo davar shel olei bavel, what's considered absolute communal, olei bavel, it's not considered a partnership, and therefore each of them, despite the neder, can still benefit from these things. Kigon Harabayis, Temple Mount, the Beis HaMikdash, V'ho'azoros, the courtyards, V'habor shebe emtza haderech, and a pit, a well, that's in the travel zone. Bovel turnpike, if you will. But even in Eretz Yisrael, things that were designated to support the public on their way on Aliyah L'Regel to the Beis HaMikdash, so there were wells, so those are totally communal, and they're not an aggregate of partnerships. Ve'ezehu davar shel oso ha'ir, what's considered of the city, that's really a partnership, and would therefore be forbidden in the case of this neder, one on the other, kigon ha'rechava, the public square, v'hamerchatz, and the bathhouse, ubeis ha'knesses, and the shul, v'hateva, v'hasfarim, and the things that are actually in the beis ha'knesses to store the Sefer Torah and the Sfarim themselves. These are things that are owned by the community, and therefore each one has a partnership in it. Yeshe Koach, thank you for joining.